What is going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Spectator Mode Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Keith Mitchell, and I wish I had a vacation, but I'm still here, so, you know, it is what it is. To the right of me is my buddy, Sis Scott. Scotty. And we got some new faces on here. You may have seen one once upon a time ago, but that was a very, very long time ago, so you probably forgot who he was. Jordan, what is up, man?
I'm good. It's midnight right now for me. I'm a little bit tired, but I'll be good. I've been ill this week, so if you see me cough, I apologize. But I'm excited to talk about video games.
I'm still coughing. I got rid of that cold, the cough, whatever the hell it was, and then it came back. And I'm like, come on, man. You were gone. Whatever. And we got a new face to the team, Kevin. Kevin's been doing some guides and some news for us. He's a big fighting game purchased a lot of that on there as well. Man. So I know he's been following up on that Fatal Fury City of Wolves game.
Oh, I love it. I just saw those preacher stuff. I'm like, damn, it's Joe, but a girl.
I got no problems with that. But guys, we normally do the games that we played, but we've got a stack of things we want to get through. So we are not doing that today. Sorry, I know you like that a lot. But what we are going to do is talk about some big booty. I mean, Starblade. Yeah. I got to say this. I'm just going to say this to everybody right now. I mean, Eve is nice and all. She's very nice and all. But 2B is my girl. I'm going to leave it right there. I love 2B. But that said, raise your hands if you played the game.
Does the demo count?
Good to go. It kind of counts.
Scott, tell us about, let's start about the controversy with this game and then move into how the game plays.
All righty. So let's start the controversy. There is a section of this. You have a lot of people discussing how they don't want games that are just going to be based around, I guess, the male gaze type of a deal, where they don't like if the female is geared towards a sexual preference towards a, I guess, male gaze. You'll see a lot of people saying that she's only made for guys in mind kind of a deal. And I'm not the biggest fan of that controversy just because the main design of the actual character is based off of a female and also then interlaced with clothing designs from the wife of the main director.
So that right there, I keep seeing articles and one of the video from Dual Shockers about talking about the male gaze and that portion right there, that part right there where the wife of the director of the game did the designs. And that has never been brought up in any of these articles and none of the videos. They completely omit the fact that, hey, a female did this.
Yep.
So that's one of the controversy I feel like is, Stellar Blade controversy on all the sides right now is extremely overblown. And there's a lot of weird petitions going around. But the other part of the controversy that people are worried about is one that's called censorship. So people are now comparing like trailers and stuff, but the main problem of it aspires from about 3 weeks ago. The Stellar Blade Twitter was excited once it went gold that it was going to be going to all regions uncensored. And people took that a certain way. Usually that means like nothing will be covered up or anything like that. And then when the reviews and the patches start hitting, some of the people started noticing that some of the outfits, mainly two of them, were very highly, not really highly changed. They're slightly changed. One of them is a holiday bunny outfit that had a bit of lingerie lace on the top of it instead of just having full cleavage. The other one was like a type of like a bondage suit. And instead of having just like her breast kind of exposed, it just put like a bra on it, which, I mean, okay. It still kept the bondage suit intact. Nothing of the actual like outfits were changed. It's just things were added to it. People have been going back now to trailers. They've been going back to literally like the tutorial video from the demo to go and actually dissect a lot of different designs and say, well, this is how it looked in the demo. This is how it looked in here. And a lot of the things were, you could argue were censored, but when they brought this up to the developers of Shift Up said that this was on the disc and everything that was released was to their actual vision. Now, There's a lot of reasons why this could be, of like why these outfits were changed between the development and to release. My biggest one is they wanted the entirety of Stellar Blade to be the same throughout all regions. There's a lot of people talking about like Baldur's Gate or like Last of Us Part 2 let certain scenes in. But the thing is, both of those scenes were only in like the Western or the EU versions. None of like the Japanese or the Chinese or areas of Asia have certain scenes cut out because they were censored. Mm-hmm. So the Stellar Blade devs just wanted the entire game to be the same throughout all regions. But because of that, it sounds like they did a few things to get on all the ESRB and types of rating guides from all different regions to be consolidated to one launch. And people are taking it very far the wrong way. Where we have petitions of free Stellar Blade, have all these outfits go back to day one. There's people like trying to buy the disc version just to realize the disc version only has two of the outfits unchanged. So you got two of the outfits. Good job. The other outfits are all in the trailers and the demo.
Let's go back and play the disc version unpatched with terrible input delay. That's just go back and just get an inferior version of the game just because we want to see some digital ass. I told you I'm going to be very blunt about that. I know people that are telling me that I shouldn't think that way, but come on, man.
It's dumb.
If you really want to see that stuff, we've got Pornhub and everything else out there. You can go see that. There's tons of hentai out there. You can go see that. Oh, my God. Please stop complaining about this.
But I don't think these people are human beings. So, you know, maybe they don't know what Pornhub is.
Oh, I'm not convinced either.
they made a Steam accounts to look at the legit porn games on the internet.
And I'm not going to talk about the people in general that are talking about this just because I don't want to. I think doing that would be childish and immature.
No, it's not worth the
people
that
are doing it.
Giving them shine.
But there are a lot of outfits out there that are like, okay, these are very, 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 very revealing. And I'm not going to say they're not very nice. I'm a guy. I like looking at an attractive female. I'm not going to lie about that. And they look very well. And there was one that was just found a couple of days ago that's like, okay, that one looks good too.
So there's a lot of outfits in the game.
So the cry of censorship, but we're seeing these other outfits that look very nice. It's like, but they didn't censor that. So what's your beef? And the fact that if the director of the game is like, look, this was my original vision of this character, of this suit. And people are going, oh no, Sony got to you. Homie, I'm telling you, this is what it was. You know, when people do reviews and games go gold and they go, hey, things may change before the game goes final retail, that happens.
Yes.
You know, and a lot of it I blame the people that were talking about the game before the game came out, like the reviewers and people had early access talking about, oh, hey, it looks like this. And then the game comes out and goes, oh no, they changed it. You weren't supposed to be saying anything in the first place, homie. Why were you talking about it?
Yeah.
You know that whole embargo shut the hell up thing, but
so they broke embargo for that.
Well,
not
they waited until embargo before basically unleashing the gates of censorship hell.
I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, Kevin, but basically when we review certain games, it depends on what the game it is and where it came from. And what the specifics are. Like, they'll tell us a lot of things like, you can't show this, you can't do this, blah, 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 blah.
Right. Yeah.
But they also tell you from the get-go, hey, you know, this is a review code and things may change before the game goes to final, or you'll get an update the day of the game coming out and it may change some things.
Yeah.
So that's
even
exactly
what happens. Goes, they'll
and
tell
why,
you specific things
you
that will be changed for launch.
You always have that little comment in your review, right? Like, anyone who does a review that does a good job is going to say, well, this might change. Like, when I talk about technical issues, I will say, but you may have a different experience because you're probably going to get a patch that I haven't been able to play on.
And it's not the first time we've had a game come out that something has changed completely, or, you know, a character looks differently, or they perform differently, or things look differently. But the problem is, it's, hey, it's this super ultra sexy mega babe that we just want to see more of. And oh my God, how dare they add a piece of lace to the costume, to the outfit. Just the game is an amazing game from what I understand. I haven't played it yet. I do have a copy of it. I will say that it was hard as hell to find a physical copy of that game.
It was sold out everywhere near me.
Dying.
Multiple GameStops. Best Buy had none. Multiple GameStops, even though I hate that place.
Yeah.
And I finally found one that had it. And in the back of my head, I'm like, I normally get digital games. Why am I trying to get this game physically?
Yeah, what was the reason, Keith? I need to know now.
What was my reason?
My reason? The reverse cover is awesome.
My reason was I went for that digital stuff going upstairs and downstairs. So I have a PlayStation 5 in my office, and I have a PlayStation 5 upstairs. I just want to be able to go up, back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. And these types of games like this, my daughter likes to play. So I don't want her to log into my account and be doing this family sharing nonsense. Here, take the disc. Go upstairs. Leave me alone. Bring it back when you're done. Don't scratch it, please. That's literally it. So I didn't want to be dumb. If I'll play like a Demon Souls or something or a Dark Souls, I'll buy them digitally because nobody's going to play them but me.
While we're on that subject, how long do we think until physical actually dies in video games?
Give it another 3 generations.
Interesting.
Reason why I say that, because Nintendo is still going to keep doing physical.
Yeah, that's Microsoft true.
And Sony is backing out. Nintendo will be that last bastion.
Nintendo's going to be the stubborn donkey in this.
Yeah, we're not going complete digital.
And I don't mind, because that's one of the reasons why I like getting physical games for Nintendo Switch.
Hey, that's what I got for Mission 2 just recently.
There you go.
See, and then, of course, you know, the big thing is also Nintendo is usually one of the first people to go, hey, this online store, we're getting rid of it.
They just did the
3DS
and the Wii U
just recently.
And my son's like, why did they do that? I'm like, Keith, they always do this. Relax, buddy. He's literally getting mad. So, Stellar Blade is a great game. I've heard nothing but fantastic things about the game. I think people, and I hate to say this because I really never say this, go outside and actually touch some grass, go look at some actual females. People, it's not that serious, for the love of God. It literally isn't.
Yeah,
and for that one person who used to be part of the game industry trying to lead this charge because he's acting completely weird, I would love to have a conversation as to why you think this needs to be a thing. Because this guy is literally the main focus point here. If it wasn't from him, I think this controversy would have been died down.
Yeah.
But he's literally going, oh, we got to do this and this, and you got to write them and tell it. Ain't nobody got time for that. If you really don't like the fact that you got a piece of lace where her ass was or whatnot, or you can't see cleavage, then go refund your game. Go tell PlayStation, hey, I don't see enough skin. I need a refund.
If there was like a serious change to the game, then I might consider, you know, complaining. But really?
It's not worth it. It's not that serious.
I will bring up another part of the claim of Centrip they do like to bring up is the blood and gore, which is slightly changed, but not because of the demo, but because of the performance mode.
Exactly.
The blood particles in the graphics mode are a lot more intense. Performance mode and the balance mode have less blood particles, and so now people are getting angry that the demo had more blood when it kind of didn't. The only thing that did have more blood in the demo was the final boss fight, and that's because they used it as a splash page to like do the trailer where like the blood like gets on Eve and then slowly dissolves to the trailer of the actual Stellar Blade video game, where it's like, now you can pre-order the game.
My brain is broken. Jeez. My brain has completely been broken because of this.
If you don't see the amount of blood you want on screen, get off balance mode, go to graphics mode.
Exactly. Problem solved, right?
You're supposed to be playing a game in balance mode anyway. It's the best of all three modes.
Balance mode is the best mode.
Why are you not playing in balance mode? Even Digital Foundry said balance mode is the best mode. And everybody takes them as gospel. So play it in balance mode.
Well, we say that, but then everybody also says that apparently Digital Foundry lie no matter what they say. Because everyone wants it to fit their narrative, right? So
it feels like it's going back to the cyberpunk.
No, they get paid by Xbox.
Yeah, I don't always agree with everything they say, but for 90% of the stuff they say, they're really spot on. So whatever. Hey, you know what? I haven't played Stellar Blade, but I have played a shit ton of No Rest for the Wicked. Oh my God. Who's played this game?
I have.
Has nobody played this game? Have you played it? What do you think about it?
I really like it. You know that I said, you know, it needs accessibility features. And that was something that I picked up within the first like 10 minutes of gameplay. I was just like, I really like this game and I love what they're doing, but I wish more people could play it because there's some really simple things that they need to just get in this game. Like really simple stuff. And that's not me knocking them. It's in early access right now. I know that they've said they're planning to add many features and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So what I want to say to people is if you are playing it, you know, have a little think. Are there features from another game that you think would work here? Even if you don't need the feature yourself. And if you can think of even one thing, leave them some feedback and tell them, because that might change someone's life in terms of being able to play this game or not. So, you know.
I will say that, echoing what you said, they are very receptive on both Twitter and also the Discord. They are listening. They have put out 6 hot fixes so far, and they are constantly pumping out new stuff. They really want this game to be amazing, and I've been playing it ever since the first day that it came out early access, and being a big Souls fiend that I am, I've been eating this game up. I have 80 hours in this game. 80 hours.
Jeez.
This game is not that long.
You have like mercy in the first 2 days or something.
I've gone back, played the game, started another character, went through, played stuff again, trying to figure out best weapons and all this nonsense. You know me. I love Souls. Like, this is an interesting title from the people who gave us Ori 1 and 2. The isometric top-down is hard to get used to at times, but it's interesting. It's interesting. Everything about it is fun. Everything about it's fun. The visuals are nice. The little touches, like the wind blowing, your clothes are blowing in the wind, or the water ripple effects. They put in so much detail this game. It's amazing. Everything is voiced. Everything is voiced.
And one thing I want to say as well, because when I first played it, the performance was quite bad.
But they
massively improved that like really quickly.
Yep.
Very, very quickly, within days. So credit to the team on that as well, because it runs really well now for me, at least.
And the next, they said they're working on adding NVIDIA's DLSS, and now they're also adading in AMD's FSR2, which wasn't on the table as far as I'm aware of, which is great for people who play on Steam Deck, because AMD, so that's going to be great stuff. Lower CPU requirements, which means they're doing a lot of optimization. Gotta stop the S word there. A lot of optimizations there. So I can't say enough about this game. If you like Souls-like games or action RPG games, you should give it a try. Now, if you're not a fan of early access games, or you just want the finished product, then obviously you definitely should wait. But we don't know when the game is coming out full access. So,
and given that they want this game to be as good as they want it to be, I think it's going to be a couple of years, if I'm being honest. Like, the way
they said end of the year, they said end of the year, early 2025.
I mean, I just don't know if I believe them on that. And maybe it's the creative person in me, but I know that when you're creative and you're trying to make the best thing you can, you keep finding ways to make it better.
Oh, I agree. I want them to adopt Blizzard's old mantra of when it's ready, when it's done. And I can wait. There's enough games coming out that I can just because I mean, as many times I played this again, I haven't played Starblade yet. We're coming up on June, and of course that means the Elden Ring DLC Shadow of the Erdtree is coming out, and there's so many things I haven't touched. Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, haven't touched yet. Might wait for the PC version. May not wait for the PC version. Because, you know, Sony, which we'll get to later on. So, I'm really loving this. I need to do a proper impression video about this, just because there's just so much stuff I want to say about the game. And all the negativity but all the things that I didn't really care for in the game, they've addressed or will address. They've already said, hey, we're talking about this. We know about this. But I will say this. I don't like the fact that when I have to make stuff, I have to cut down trees and mine. That's got to go.
See, I really like that.
I hate that. This is not a Kobe game. I don't want to be sitting there waiting for
resource management.
I'm cutting the mine. No, this
that's what's kind of making me hate Unicorn Overlord right now.
I don't have any time for that. I got no time for that. Let me just get my resources and go, please.
They're trying to do something different. They're trying to find their own thing and not just copy everybody else.
That happened, and I was like, oh my god, I'm playing World of Warcraft again. That's not this again.
Oh, wow.
So, I've got issues with that. But you know what else I got issues with? The game ministry laying off people. Oh. We've got more layoffs. Scott, take it away, because I'm a little frustrated about this.
We've had a lot of fun layoffs this past basically year. It feels like every other day we get no information of like another company that had to be laid off or another company that had another thing go down. There's been so many just problematics when it comes to layoffs. We even have like Take-Two took down one of those studio layoffs.
Oh my god, they need to get punched in the face. Yeah, Roll 7 and Intercept Games.
Yep.
And they also cut some from Private Division, right? Did you guys see that?
Yeah,
I saw that too. And I was like, wait, No Rest for the Wicked is being published by...
Yes.
What? Wait a second.
They may not be as receptive as before.
How's that
work? What's going on here?
Good.
But yeah, Roll 7 is actually a really decent company because they gave us the Ali Ali series, which if people don't know what that is, it's a fun non-series skateboarding gaming series. And the most recent game was Ali Ali World.
Yeah.
And that's Ali fun. World. That is fun. Mm-hmm. And now gone. Literally gone. And then also, was it Roller Dome, which people couldn't stop talking about last year?
I have it on like three different consoles now.
Gone.
It's fun.
Gone.
Oh, man.
Just gone. They haven't even said why. They just said it's gone. Oh, wait, no, I'm reading now. A cost reduction program to identify efficiencies across the business to enhance company margin profile while still investing for growth.
So efficiency.
More
money?
Spending money, but they're doing reductions to save money.
That means the people up top were getting more money and they realized, we gave them too much money. We got to cut the little guy. Oh, my God.
They were making as much money as we were hoping they were going to make. And it's just like they were still profitable.
And we also got, what was it? So, yeah, Private Division is losing. They lost some people. And also, what was it? Kerbal Space Program 2, which is a game that my son was looking forward to because he loves the first one. And now that's gone. And it's not just this. It's not just this. It's like just about every other week or every month we're hearing about a developer being either they're either getting closed down completely or they're losing people or they're being sold to a company that doesn't know what to do with them and then they lay them off. You know, we still got the Eraser Group. They're nonsense. Not the Embracer Group, the Eraser Group.
And there's about to be three different companies now.
The Thanos of the gaming industry at this point.
It's just, it's getting ridiculous. And the problem that I have with this is, you know, these companies, these upper management are still making crap tons of money. And I will continue to say this because it's what's happening. They're getting money. They're getting paid money. The developers are getting kicked out the door. And there's just so many people out there right now that have lost their job, developer after developer after developer. And what makes it hard is these developers will get fired, get laid off, find a job, start doing well. That company gets laid off. And it's like, why would you want to be a developer anymore? The game industry right now is super volatile.
So I know someone, and I won't name who they are and who they've worked for, but over the last 9 months, they've been laid off from four different companies.
Jeez.
Wow.
No, thank you.
Not a whole lot of job security right now in the development field.
Yeah. Nope. Not at all. None at all.
And it's kind of funny because I think that whole, that whole Nintendo mantra where they're like, oh, yeah, Nintendo's never laid off anybody, but they had something with the QA division recently.
Yeah.
It's just like everyone keeps on pointing at that example, but it's like, no, they're just as bad. Like, it can happen to anybody.
It can happen to anybody. At this point in time, and as you can see, I'm the older here. When I was younger, this stuff didn't happen. We didn't hear about developers getting laid off or the stuff that's happening now.
It's also just because we didn't hear about it. Like, right. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen more now, because it definitely does. The industry is way more of a business now, but it did happen back then as well. You know, I want to.
Just not as much. Just definitely not as much.
I mean, it wasn't really as big to have as many nearly as many layoffs.
I mean, at this point now, we've got companies. You know, oh, you finished the game. Goodbye. Goodbye. Goodbye.
Yeah. Don't you still need
Nope. Yeah, like Luminous, getting that cutoff like right after Forsaken was done. That's like, wait a sec.
It's like you know, I always remember, and this isn't the same thing, but a similar thing could have happened back in the day. Obsidian obviously made Fallout New Vegas, right? And they had that thing where they missed out on their bonuses because of a Metacritic point.
Yeah.
And one of the things I heard is that if they were below a certain Metacritic, there was actually going to be people that would have lost their jobs as well.
And I got to say, when I heard that as well, that is dumb, using a game aggregate to get people bonuses or keep their job. Like, what? What? It should be based on sales, not a Metacritic. Hey, how many copies of this game did we sell? How much money did this game bring us in? Why are we using a Metacritic to go, well, you didn't get an 8, but you sold 20,000 copies of the game?
Tell that to Sony, who don't want to make a Days Gone 2, and yet it's a really good, well-selling game.
Do you really want me to sit here and talk about Sony and PlayStation?
Well, you're going to. I got
stuff for months. That's not. We won't do that. Sony can do no wrong. Sony can do no wrong.
The game industry, everyone can do wrong.
Yeah, didn't they axe London like a couple months back?
Yeah. After Jim Ryan visits it.
That's the best thing.
It's like, oh, hey, Sony,
you lose your job, but I lose my job. Bye.
Sony never closes down a company. Homie, what are you talking about? Look at all these companies Xbox closed down. Homie, you know how many companies that Sony has closed down? Yeah. They don't do that. Oh, my. Okay.
Everybody
goodbye.
Closes down companies. Nobody is safe.
I got no time to talk to you. Goodbye.
That elitism. Like, that's happened. That's there. Like, everyone's done it.
It's so frustrating. And I don't have any skin in the game with this. I don't have any stock with Sony or anybody out there. But it's just frustrating because, at the end of the day, I hate seeing another person treated like crap. And that's what's happening here.
Yeah.
You think you're doing well. You think you've got a game series that's doing well, that sells well. And then the next thing you know, oh, hey, by the way, we're laying off your entire division. We're killing you all. Goodbye. Now it's like, what do you mean? Is this game not giving you, not selling copy upon copy? Hadn't this game made millions of copies? Hadn't this game sold well? So why are you laying me off now? I don't understand. Yeah, of course, it was also an indie game. Indie games. So now we can't even say indie games are safe anymore.
No, especially when they get bought out by publishers.
Oh, yeah. Of course. They're such good ideas sometimes. Like,
you got something to say, Jordan, before we scooter over to the next one?
It makes me feel sick, you know, and I have my own podcast, and every week one of the things I say on there is like, when is there going to be no layoffs? Like, can we have one week where there's no layoffs, please?
2026.
At this point, yeah.
You think so? Because it's like every year we're going, this year is the best year for gaming. Oh, wait, look at all these layoffs.
It's the best
next year will be better.
Leasing games?
Next year will be better.
Yeah. And I mean, especially year,
and he goes, oh, well, yeah.
Yeah, there's more layoffs this year than there was in the entirety of last year.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know.
And that's the sad part.
We're not even on the halfway mark.
Ugh. Exactly. I mean, you're getting bangers after bangers, but then after later on, it's just, Well, on the other end of that, it's, you know,
I will say there's one good thing that does come out of this, and it's something I've spoken to some of my former colleagues about as well, is that this type of thing spurs the creation of new independent studios. And you see a lot of studios now kind of growing and you know, finding things. And I would just implore people, please support new things. Because you say you want new things all the time, but you don't support them. And what was that game, Immortals of Avium, that came out last year?
Oh, no.
And don't get me wrong, it might not have been the best game in the world, but those guys were a brand new studio. It was their first game, and they tried their best, yeah? But nobody supported it. And what happened? They laid off like 70% of their staff as a result. And it's just like, you know, it's a really hard situation to be in, because I don't think gamers really want new things, but maybe that's just me.
No, we definitely do. It's just, it depends on what it's like. I'll be honest. I mean, I know that game gets a lot of criticism, and there's a lot of things they could have done better. But at the same time, it's just, Who wanted a magical for Call of Duty?
Sure, there's a market out there.
That would. I would love it if they took like Shadowrun or something like that and said, okay, we're going to turn this into a Call of Duty. Or maybe like a really heavy IP like that. But yeah, Immortals, I guess I just didn't feel it.
There was a lot going against that game, unfortunately. They had a very big hill to go up. And I love the fact that people were trying new things. I want people to try new things. I want people to take more risks in this industry, because when people take so many risks in this industry, we get so many brand new ideas and so many amazing games that it's just...
And I agree with you, but when these studios take this risk, people need to support it. Look at one... And this is no joke. One of the best games to release this year was Prince of Persia, yeah? And The Lost Crown. And nobody bought the game. And yet that was Ubisoft taking a risk, doing something very different for them. And it's one of their best games in years, and no one bought it.
Yeah, bringing Prince of Persia back into the 2D realm of sorts.
It makes you wonder sometimes, what are these companies meant to do? Because you complain when they do the same thing over and over again. But when they don't do the same thing, you don't want it. So
I can't speak on this directly. I just can only tell you what I feel about this. And I thought about this before. And a lot of it boils down to ambition. The ambition and the expectations of a game. Obviously, if you're doing something new, you should not expect it to sell. It's just, that's what it is. You should not be putting in a crap ton of money for its development. You should not. If something is completely brand new and you don't have an inkling of it going, well, we're going to put this game out in a sea of Metroidvanias that are already out there, and it doesn't really do anything different than these games, you got to think about what's going to happen here. Yeah. You know, unfortunately, Metroidvania is a flooded market.
And yet most people that have played it would tell you it's one of the better ones.
Oh, yeah, it's a great game. It's just the people aren't playing it. It's
just so hard, because it's like, what are you meant to do? You know, it's I don't really understand. I feel like there's a disconnect between the gaming audience and the people creating the games that wasn't there before. And I don't know where that's come from.
But
there's a lot to talk about there.
I'm always feeling as if, wouldn't it be the community manager's jobs to be able to bridge that gap in a sense, or even marketing itself? Yeah. It always has me questioning that, like, especially when we do get new IPs or new ideas like that, and they don't do as well as they should. Like, even Bats Are Immortals. Yeah, I mean, they had a... Like, Gina Torres was on that game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, with Cleopatra 2525 suits, this woman. And I thought, okay, this should be it. But I mean, it did feel like there was a lot of repetition between it.
Do you know what the funniest thing with that game is, though? I can guarantee you, if that game was just called a different name that everybody already knew, it would have sold like anything. It could have been exactly the same game with a different name, and it would have sold like anything. And that's the crazy part, is like, people are so invested in IPs that they know at this point. That's why, you know, going back to Ubisoft, I'll use them as the example. These RPG-style Assassin's Creed games didn't need to be Assassin's Creed games. No. But they sold more because they were called Assassin's Creed.
Yeah, like, you can argue that. You definitely can argue that. People, let's be honest. Again, we as humans are not a big fan of change. We
tell me about it.
Don't like to see new things. I mean, unfortunately, that's just the way it is. Unless it really, really clicks with us, unless it's driven home over and over and over, which was also a big issue with that game with Prince of Persia, was the lack of advertising, which also was a big issue with the other game. It was the lack of advertising. People didn't know what this was until, like, oh, hey, it's here. What is this? What is it? What is this game all about? You know, we can go back to this right now, and controversy aside, Star Blade, everybody wants to play the game. Everybody wants to play the game. Controversy, or because it's a banging female, or because it's got great combat.
Shall I ask you a question, though, Steve? Shall I ask you a question, yeah?
Yeah.
It's like, my friend Steve said, would people want to play this if it wasn't a PlayStation published game, though? like genuinely, like,
that's, I want to play it. I don't care.
Genuine question is like, you do wonder. Like, sometimes you look at these games and you go, like, how much of it is, I want to play this because it's only on my preferred plastic box.
I will say, in the case of Stellar Blade, Project Eve was one of the most watched trailers before the PlayStation thing came.
Yeah,
so that wouldn't have changed.
It was supposed to come out for everything.
Yeah, that's true.
And then we got the, hey.
And then we got, here's the name. Also, it's a PS5 exclusive. What?
Here's some money. Here's some money. Change it to a PlayStation 5 exclusive.
I believe they might have even said it was a Game Pass Day 1 game at one point before PlayStation got involved.
Game Pass. I think it was showed at Xbox One that everyone assumed it was going to be Game Pass. Because everyone assumes anything that gets shown at Xbox is a Game Pass game, but that's not how that
crazy,
goes.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, I know. I don't have it on my damn PC, and I'm mad. Where's my PC copy? You know what? It was on PC. We could fix those issues with those with that the skinnier message. We could mod that back in and so much more.
Exactly.
I am both excited and terrified when Stellar Blade hits PC.
We're gonna get those Street Fighter 6 mods that, you know, we get on stream. And we forget. Oh my god, he's got a nude mod on. What's going on here?
Someone forgot to use their mod manager. Go.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's a conversation that can be a very long conversation. And again, change, ambition, expectation for sales, and what exactly it is.
I have one other question about change before we move on.
Do you got any change?
Why?
I don't.
Why have people over seemingly like the last 12 months, everyone wants to act like second party games don't exist anymore. And
they really don't anymore. They really don't anymore.
But the thing is, they do, because a second party game is a game that is developed by a studio that the platform holder doesn't own, even if they publish the game. That is what a second party game is.
Now, I'll give you a great example on that. Square Enix. It's not a second party company. It's a third party company. But they've been acting like they're a second party company.
In some cases, I'll give you that.
If you look at their entire repertoire, there's a huge
example,
platform games for Square Enix.
Yeah.
I agree with that. For example, Helldivers 2, which we're going to talk about shortly.
Are we?
I'll say that for Helldivers.
That is a game that is technically second party, but for some reason, everybody thinks it's a first party PlayStation game. But they don't own the studio. They published the game.
Like, the hardest thing with that too is Helldivers, the IP, is also owned by PlayStation, so that's a whole other ball game to deal with.
But
I mean, you gotta remember, Arrowhead has done a couple of games in the past, and they were multi-platform. Well, not multi-platform. They weren't Xbox. Put it this way, they never put out a game for Xbox. Put it that way. They put out Magicka, which was a fun game. I love Magicka. They put out Gauntlet, the remake of Gauntlet. That was a fun game. Never hit Xbox.
Yeah. I think Helldivers you still understand Xbox. My point, though, right? So it's like, what happened where people just. Now it seems to be that if the company that makes the console publishes the game, it's considered a first-party game. Like, so are you telling me that if, I don't know, in some wild world, PlayStation pick up the publishing rights for GTA, even though Rockstar make it, and even if it was to go everywhere still, it would be considered a first-party PlayStation game?
I think it depends on IP ownership. That's the big thing there. If they own the IP and then you have a second party company work on a game, I mean,
yeah, that's fair enough. I can understand that part of it. Yeah, I'd agree. But I don't know. I just feel like people have forgotten that second parties existed in the same way they forgot double A games existed for quite a while.
Double A games? You mean quadruple games?
Nobody wants a triple A game.
Ubisoft introduced that one right there.
That did great for them. This game took years to come out. It finally came out, and it's like, it's trash. Go play Sea of Thieves. I played that
for way too long.
Can we talk about more Helldivers 2? Because I know that's in the news.
Well, that was later on, but you know what? Let's just talk about Helldivers
2. Just rip the Band-Aid off.
Let's just talk about Helldivers 2. So, I woke up this morning, coffee in my hand, came down to my office, turned on my PC, get ready to go to work, and then I was like, what's going on? Why are people complaining about Helldivers 2? What's going on? Of course, I read up a little bit, and then went on Twitter, and I was like, this is dumb. This is a non-issue. Why are people getting up so upset? And then it was later on after I started talking to people, I was like, oh, shit, this is not good. This is not good. So for people who don't know, and I'm pretty sure you know by now, but if you don't know, because you live in the cave, make
we have
Iron
a video
Man,
that also cool. talks about the YouTube.
Yeah, we have a video on YouTube, but you know, basically, so when you first purchased or were going to purchase Helldivers 2 on Steam, there was a disclaimer that says, hey, by the way, you're going to need a PlayStation network account, PSN account, to play the game. However, due to technical issues, it was not enforced. And ever since when did it come out? January 8th? For the last couple months, the game allowed anybody to play the game on Steam. You did not need a PSN account, and you were good to go. Sony decided that nonsense is over, and as of May 6th is when they're going to
start adding the disclaimer to the actual game, and then May 30th to June 4th is when they start enforcing it.
Yeah, so here's the problem here. Not everybody has access to a PSN account. There are regions that don't have access to PSN, which doesn't make any sense because, you know, Sony is the best, but yet they're lacking in terms of getting their network service everywhere in the world. While Steam is everywhere, while Xbox Live is pretty much in almost every region.
It's in the region that's used pretty much.
But we've got PSN that is not in certain places. So the problem here is there are people who are playing the game right now who once June 4th or 6th comes, they will be locked out of their accounts and cannot play the game anymore because they don't have a PSN account. That's the problem.
However, there's been no clarification on how it will work in those specific regions. And even the developers of the game don't know right now, right?
Right. They said that Sony is the one pushing this. We have no idea what's happening. We're trying to find out information, and Sony has told us nothing.
Sounds like whenever we try to talk to Sony.
Yeah, pretty much. So here's the scary part. There's three things here that I talked to people that were like, I don't like this. One, obviously, I can't play the game that I pay for anymore, so that's one. Two, I'll be connected to the PlayStation Network, and what happens if they get compromised yet again? Is my account going to be affected now? Am I going to be screwed? Other people were concerned that that if, say, their PlayStation account gets banned, say they do a chargeback and their PlayStation account gets banned, will it affect their Steam account? Which I don't think that's going to happen. That's two separate accounts. But the question is out there. So there's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of frustration. And the fact that PlayStation was like, you know what? We don't care that this game is doing fantastic numbers. That this may end up hurting our bottom line and our community, or the Helldivers 2 community. We're going to do this. So I've been watching Steam, and I've been watching
the reviews slowly build up, and then the scores slowly go down.
I mean, let me check it right now. It has not been good. Let's see here.
No.
Let's see. What are we looking at right now? We are now mixed mostly. Wow. Yeah. It's dropped half. Wow.
Yeah, it's dropped a lot. This is a weird issue because on the one hand, I understand where a lot of people are coming through with the regions and things. But on the other hand, it's also like this is a bit of an overreaction when we don't have the full picture.
Yeah.
Like, we don't understand everything that's going on. We just have a disclaimer of what will eventually happen. And even that, I'm hoping a lot. I mean, I'm guessing most of the reasons people are doing this is for a hope that Sony will acknowledge it, that they will either remove it or they'll make it a lot easier to get a PSN account, which it's funny when you go into the, I was researching this a lot actually with the PSN account before the regions, when you look at their FAQs for the PlayStation Network, they do even, if they do actually suggest you, if there's not, if your region is not in the PSN, make a region close to where your region is just so you can stay on the same time zone.
Yeah.
And even when, like, there's even a disclaimer that says, but if there's any technical issues, good luck.
And it's
we won't acknowledge that you live in the region you live in.
Try and set up an account that's not close to you, say you live in Siberia and you try to do a North American account, that's against terms of service.
It is, but I also have to note that PlayStation does not enforce that at all. There's a few times where you see that happen, like very few, but it does happen where people do get banned for having something wrong with their account and where they're like located versus where they signed the region in. But for the most part, there's like people who have like five different accounts in five different regions. It's not a very enforced policy. It's more of a, if you don't tell, we won't tell kind of a deal.
I will admit that a lot of this is a knee-jerk reaction, but it's warranted. It should not have happened like this.
But what also, Steam users are very notorious for hating every other launcher.
Yes, we are. I will say that. There should be only one launcher in PC, and that is Steam.
Yeah. And we don't know how it will impact.
What are you going to do one day when Steam dies?
Actually gets
like, what are you going to do?
I'll be dead by then. Who cares? I won't care. I'll be dead. I don't see Steam.
That's logical.
Steam is the juggernaut. Let's be honest. We've got Steam.
I want to ask a question on Steam. How much of Steam's popularity isn't about them being good at what they do and it's just because they did it first? Like, how much of it is just because they were first?
I wouldn't say that they did it first, because when Steam first came out, everybody and their mom had a website to sell their game.
Yeah, true. It was a completely different landscape.
Yeah, it was, and Battle.net was around too. It was a complete different landscape back then. And when Steam first came out, it sucked.
But there is something to first adopter's advantage, right? Like, there is something to being the first to do something gives you this almost automatic, like...
I wouldn't agree with that, because there's one thing for being first, and there's one thing for being good.
Yeah,
the biggest thing I think for Steam as like a proponent for it as a launcher is just how convenient everything is on Steam.
They
have everything that you want, from a wish list to a cart to gifting. They have things basically download and overclock your internet just so that you can get everything.
They do fast. The family sharing now as well.
The family sharing is actually really snazzy. I do think that I hope that they get it. Well, not rework, but I do hope that eventually we can actually have a family share where we can actually play library games together, but that's still somewhere.
That's a sales thing. I don't think that's ever going to happen.
It does on PlayStation and Xbox. Come on, Steam!
We got remote play. We got that. So
Remote play helps, yeah. But yeah, Steam itself is extremely convenient, and it doesn't hurt your like CPU at all. It doesn't take up a lot of just being up. Like, that's some of the issue with some of these launchers, especially like Ubisoft and EA, where they'll eat up a lot of your like memory just by
I'll flip the question slightly then. Is there, because I'm fairly new to PC gaming. Excuse me. But has there been a launcher that has been good that has only failed because of how dominant Steam is?
Nope. Not a one.
Interesting.
Literally, not a one.
Interesting.
And that's the dumb thing. You would think a launcher. Here's a great example. Here's a perfect example.
I was going to ask that.
Here we go. Epic Games. They came out forever after Steam. They gave us their Epic Games Store storefront launcher, and it was garbage. It was missing so many things that Steam already had. And it's like, hey, if you're trying to compete with Steam, then you should look at everything that Steam has.
Do the bare minimum and be like at least next to close to that.
And still what they have. You didn't have any wish list. There was no carts.
Do you know what the worst thing is? The one that should be able to compete because they have a games console is Microsoft.
Yeah, Microsoft's storefront on PC is.
I know, but they should be able to, right? Like, they should be able to.
They should have it, but.
Yeah.
Microsoft, I feel like, is a little too much just like, we'll just deal with Steam rather than we'll try to compete.
I will give Microsoft credit that the Xbox app, Microsoft Store, is a lot better than it was back in the day.
Oh yeah, they definitely improved it. It was terrible.
Like,
yeah, because
like,
they tried to unify
it. I don't want to install this game on my C drive. Well, that's too bad. Well, I don't want it on my C drive. I've got three other drives. Well,
you better go into your notepad.ini and look at all
the different directories. You got to change everything. I don't want this here. Why is it? No, I don't want that. It's like, it's still bad when you install a game and then you try to uninstall a game and then it leaves remnants on your drive. Like, I want to remove this. Can't remove this. You don't own it.
Get yourself Revo uninstaller. That's a good piece of tech there. remove the remnants from your drive.
Steam came first, and then they slowly they evolved the game. Yeah. And it's not that Steam is the first one. Like, I use Epic Games Store.
Yeah.
And not just because they have free games. But
like 90% why? No.
I mean the free game doesn't hurt, but you know, there are a lot of games we get that
the other 10% is because Kingdom Hearts is still exclusive to Epic Games.
Yeah, and that right there, that's what pisses me off. They pay for exclusivity, and it's like, why are you doing this?
Man.
You bought the company that developed Rocket League, and then you pulled it from Steam and put it on Epic Games Store. Like, what kind of dickhead decision was that? That was terrible. You want to compete with Steam? I'm gonna buy everything. You've been taking a page out of the Sony playbook, haven't you?
But apparently, Keith, you know, you're not. You shouldn't put all of your games everywhere and make money, because that's a bad thing.
No. You shouldn't take your games off of one platform and make it exclusive to another platform.
I agree.
If you're Square Enix, you want to put Final Fantasy Remake on all the platforms. You want to release it on all the platforms day
release
one.
Release it on fridges, like so, Skyrim.
I mean, hell, we can play games on refrigerators, and you know, I'm not going to get into that. But I'm digging on Final Fantasy, not because I hate the series, because I don't have a problem with the series. I love Remake. I was like,
it has a sales issue. Let's be honest,
Rebirth has a sales issue, and a lot of it comes a lot. Here's the thing: I talked about this to a couple people, and I saw a couple podcasts do say the same thing. One. People wanted it on PC. Two, not everybody has a PlayStation. Three, a lot of people who played Remake on a PC are like, I want to play the follow-up on PC because I already have Remake on PC. Rebirth did not come out on PC. So people are like, well, I already have this on PC. I'm going to wait.
My fear is that they're going to do exactly what they did with Remake and have a year of exclusivity with Epic Games.
And that shouldn't be a thing. Mm. It should be available on every platform. That's my dig against Epic Games. Make your games available on both platforms and then give the consumer the option to go to your store or not. By you forcing this, you're pissing off people. There are people who just got into PC gaming and have seen the stuff that Epic Games does or have heard about the stuff they do, and they're like, I don't want to have anything to do with it. Matt on our team refuses to play anything on Epic Games Store.
Even if we get a freaking key, he'd get angry at me.
Let me ask you.
We got an Epic Games key. Nope, not touching that.
Going back to the news that we were just talking about, Helldivers 2, would you refuse to make an account to continue playing your game? Like, is it that big of an issue for you?
I've uninstalled the game.
Interesting.
Wow. I will support the PC gamers that are being affected. Because it doesn't just affect them. It affects everybody. Look at this. The numbers of the game are going to drop. Less people are going to play. People are going to get frustrated. Now, let's say that maybe this PlayStation account stuff, we don't know, but that's just hypothetical, that it removes crossplay. One of the big things about this game is the ability to crossplay. What happens if that gets removed? Again, hypothetical. More people are going to stop playing. The big draw was I can play with my PlayStation friends and they can play with me. Linking the account should be an optional. Should be optional. You shouldn't force me. What's happening here is PlayStation wants to see those metrics. They want to see how well the game is selling. They want to know how many people are online, and they probably want a bit more information that they're not telling us.
Yeah,
and they want to do what Xbox doesn't say. We have 500 million players right now on Minecraft.
And they want to do that.
They want to be able to track every player playing every single one of their games. But I also think, and this could be a positive thing, maybe, I think that part of it is probably that PlayStation are probably working on some sort of PC launcher of their own.
They probably are working on Ghost of Tsushima.
But this is not the way to do it. Why would you force people to do this?
Do Xbox force people to connect their Xbox games, accounts?
Yes, they do.
And that doesn't seem to be as much of an issue, right?
No, because you can play. You can get Xbox Live accounts everywhere.
Not everywhere, but in more regions.
Yes, more regions. And that's the big thing. I'm not complaining that. Hey, I'm required to do a PlayStation Network account. I don't care about that. But the problem is there's less places for people to go to get access to an account.
I will admit this. So this was actually kind of reminiscent of the drama that started when Minecraft did this as initial thing back in 2020. Xbox introduced basically that if you ever want to play online with Minecraft, you have to have an Xbox Live account. And eventually they forced it on even the Java version that wasn't made by Xbox. So they had a lot of issues and people getting angry because of the same thing where not every region had Xbox Live accounts. So that was one of the big pushes that Xbox Live got into a lot more regions was because of this exact thing happening. So my hope is that this is what's going to happen with Sony is they're going to realize, oh, crap, we can't just geo-lock things to people
but also, who
play our games.
But also, Microsoft is just way better at server stuff. Like, let's be honest.
I mean, they've had practice.
They own most of them.
I'm hoping that this eventually changes.
40 years of practice.
This is just another games for Windows Live. Those remember that you realize
that was
super terrible. I'm hoping that is another one of those and eventually goes away. If Sony cares, because end of the day, this is hurting their bottom line. This will hurt their bottom line. Even people that were not thinking about playing the game are going to go, this is terrible. Yeah. Or people who were going to play the games have found out, oh, wow, this is terrible. Or people who were going to buy the game are now in Siberia who are like, well, I can't play the game. You just lost those sales. I don't know why I keep saying Siberia, but you lost
you
those
just
sales.
Have that on the mind.
And that is a bad thing. Yeah. Make it optional. Let people opt out of this.
And it's That's bad when to... over 50% of the copies were sold on PC as well. So over 50% of your audience for the game.
The PC gamers led the charge and they were like, let's go for democracy. Then they're like, whatever. We don't care anymore. This is dumb.
Yeah, what are the scenarios going to do now? Like, some of them really depend on that.
Animations are now going to basically control all the worlds.
I mean,
rest in peace, Super.
They were actually Sony was actually them. We didn't realize that in the end. The enemy was us.
The enemy was Sony.
I'm hoping it gets changed. I'm more than likely it will get reversed.
Yeah, I feel like there's going to be a lot more information coming out.
Yeah,
when things start actually getting closer to that time period. I'm sure Sony at least will have answers by the time that hits. I don't think
that's
they're going to keep
with it. A lot of this is overreaction, but the thing again. When you pull this off on Arrowhead and make Arrowhead look like the bad guys, and they're like, look, we had no idea this was happening. This is not us. We didn't do this. That's problematic. That was not good form from Sony.
But then the problem is the gaming community's first thought is always towards the developer. We saw this, you know, and I hate to bring up Cyberpunk, but let's be real.
No problems doing it.
But let's be real. This was one of the big things with Cyberpunk is really the dev team wasn't at fault in that entire situation.
But the dev team is never at fault. No. The dev team is never at fault. The dev team is never at fault. They're never at fault. They're not the people saying we want to push this out now. It is never the dev fault. Never.
Yeah precisely.
But again, the dev is the easy scapegoat. That's the problem. Any situation, the dev is always the easy scapegoat.
Hence Sony not responding to literally anybody. You know?
Yeah.
No. We'll have to wait and see what happens. I really hope this gets reversed. Speaking about developers and frustration, let's talk about Hellblade 2.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah. So there was a lot of people complaining about the lack of Xbox advertisement of this game, even though this game's coming out on May 21st or 22nd, I believe.
21st, yeah.
21st. So, you know, there's a lot of people going, hey, Xbox does a terrible job of advertisement. Hey, what's going on with the advertisement of this game? This game's going to bomb. There's no advertisement. I mean, you're kind of talking about the game. But regardless, so out of nowhere, Xbox is like, oh, hey, by the way, or Aaron Greenberg was like, hey, so we're going to do a lot of things. We've got a paid advertisement. We've got a cinema launch program, which means, I don't know, I guess that means that's going to be in movies. Trailers are going to be in movies.
Probably.
Brand partnerships, which means more influencers are going to be in your face talking about the game. Yeah. Out-of-home advertising, I don't know what the hell that means. And a lot more. So
they're gonna have people door to door go to your home and say, hey, have you heard
Gordon Saviors Hellblade 2? No, we don't want to play this game. Go away.
Probably. I don't know. Maybe they'll probably like take over a subway or some shit.
But it's gonna be interesting that
Ragnarok did that. God of War Ragnarok did that. Like I saw that in my city too, and I'm like, what?
But this reminds me of Elden Ring. You know, when Elden Ring was first coming out, it was like 3 weeks or so before the game's come out. Everybody's like, there's no advertising for this game. Oh, my God. And then all of a sudden, in your face, everywhere, Elden Ring, even on TV.
Yep. Don't forget, Ming-Na Wen was on that.
Well, is that game you want
to
play?
One comment I saw on Twitter that actually had some common sense to it and I think might have had a point was that the thing is, the way games are advertised and the way certain things are advertised has changed because the TikTok generation have a different way of taking in information. And if you advertise stuff too quickly and too far in advance, they will actually forget or they'll see it so much that they don't care anymore. So you have to balance that. And I think we will see more and more games basically having no advertisement outside of the trailers and reveals that we see until the month of release of the game. I think that's going to become fairly commonplace, if you ask me.
So I'm the old head. I remember when games were coming out and we had commercials on TV and we saw them plastered on buses and, you know, all those things. But now we have the power of the internet and celebrities and music videos and all that other stuff. So you would see more advertisements everywhere. There's more out there. TikTok, Twitter, so I'm not going to call it X, YouTube, everywhere. So the fact that people were going, hey, this multi-million dollar game is not going to have any kind of advertisement. It's like, what are you smoking?
Yeah. You I was there, man. Smoking.
And the other thing is,
I was there.
People need to remember when you talk about something, you're advertising it because you're talking about it.
That right there, really what I said at the beginning of this thing. Like, you're like, where's the advertisement for the game? You're talking about the game.
You're the advertisement now, bucko. You're doing it for free.
It's on the tip of your tongue. You're complaining about the game. Here it is. Go complain to your 5,000 friends. This game has no advertisement. What's this game about?
We're Tell living about an era game. Now where controversy is the advertisement at this point. We have like what Hogwarts Legacy sold so much because of it. We've got so many games where like all these are super controversial and it's just like, and now they're being bought in space because people now know there's a game. You caught your head controversy in it.
exactly.
It's price effect. It's a lot of people on Stellar Blade. It's like there's so much controversy. It exists.
It's the cause and effect. I mean, I agree to Keith's point. Like back then, like, you know, you're busy watching Kung Fu, the Legend Continues, but then after later on, you're seeing Mortal Kombat. God. Right? Remember that, y'all?
Man, it's a different landscape. And for people to complain and get frustrated that this game is not going to get any kind of advertisers, like, you are crazy. Microsoft is, for lack of any tact, Microsoft is not going to let this game fail.
No.
Outside of it just being terrible all around in terms of gameplay. They are going to push this so far up your butt, you're going to get tired of hearing about this game.
Mm.
You turn your Xbox, you're going to see it.
Oh, yeah, that's right. They're doing the dynamic ads now.
Yeah, exactly.
Have you heard of our Lord and Savior?
No! Do you know what? I personally don't hate that. Like, I know people really kicked off about that, but I don't hate it. Like, you can literally press a button to close it, and it shows up only that one time. Like, once you've put the console on once and seen that advert, you never see it again. Really? So
it's not like Injustice 2 where I start it up and it keeps telling me, hey, you could buy source crystals if you want. I bet I could.
But that's in-game purchases, no? Or is that something else?
So I wouldn't worry about it. This game's going to get a crap ton of advertisement. Mm-hmm. I'm curious about what this cinema stuff is all about. It's going to be interesting if you're going to, you know, have viewings or stuff about the game in a theater, because that would be pretty cool. So that's coming. Don't worry about it. 3 weeks is almost here. Mark is off. We asked for a review copy. We kind of want one. I'm not too proud to be. That's what.
Yeah, we would really
want to review this. So we may get on one.
Okay, TLC.
I'm not too proud. TLC.
And we'll just tell you now. We will review this game either way, but we would really like to review it the actual professional way.
He said professionals.
Yeah, I mean, the theatrical thing kind of reminds me of like Overwatch when that was about to come out. They actually did have like a theater thing. And I went to it, and they showed like all the different animated shorts. Nice. Even got the cup still around, and I was just like, "Did they really need this though?"
Yes,
the game's gonna sell itself.
This game, how else are you gonna know how big Tracer's fanny is if you don't see it in the big cinema?
And I'll be perfectly honest. I didn't play the first one. Well, me back. I played it, but when that game first came out, it had a lot of performance issues.
Oh, so yeah.
I played on the PC.
I got into the beta initially for the first Overwatch, and it was a mess, especially if you did the Symmetra turret bug all the time, which was great. Yeah.
I played on PC, and it was a hot mess, and it got to the point where my machine was like, yep, turn this off. What's going on here? Not playing this. And I never went back to it, so I need to go back to it and finish the game because it's on Xbox Game Pass, I'm pretty sure. And I own it. I think I own it. Do I own it? I'm pretty sure I do own it.
Doesn't matter if you own it. It's now free, so.
Yeah, two is free to play.
The discs are now just coasters. I got three of them.
Yeah, because when it came out for PC, it also came out with the VR edition.
I put myself into Overwatch so much, I even got into a bunch of amateur leagues back when it was in its hype. Yeah. And I was so like pumped for Overwatch everything. Like I'd watch all the BlizzCon stuff. I'd get all the character trailers and everything. Overwatch 2 came out. I was initially on board until they decided Overwatch 1 is no longer going to be a part of it. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
Yeah, which was so weird.
Let's
not
talk about
Overwatch. That took the entire... Anyways, that's not... That's my not dreams being that. Crushed is not part of the discussion.
Yeah. I mean, I felt the same way, but I mean...
While we're on the subject of Game Pass and...
No!
It's not what you think. I'm not going to be horrible.
Is it? Give us a synopsis.
No.
What is it?
Have we spoken about the fact that Xbox have officially announced their showcase?
Oh, right. They announced it back before this, but this is their official announcement.
I mean, they did, but they officially announced it, right? And they... apparently redacted game, but everyone knows what it is.
That Call of Duty? No, that's not. Is that Call of Duty?
Do you know what the funniest?
Cerebrus.
It would actually be hilarious though if they do something and the logo changes and it's like completely some different game.
That's not even.
It would be amazing.
It's an Obsidian game.
Unfortunately, that image was already data mined, so we know it's a Call of Duty. So
for sure.
But to be honest, since you brought that up, and you know it wasn't on our agenda, let's just talk about that because I mean, there's not really much to talk about.
It's
going to be a Microsoft Xbox first party event. Yeah. Partners, just say our first parties because we own these people. Yeah. This is our stuff.
And I've seen some people saying that, you know, Microsoft is basically making their own E3 at this point because they have enough stuff to just do their own E3.
I mean, they could. They're not wrong. Let me just be honest with you real quick. This showcase sucks. Not in terms of the showcase sucking, but the fact that it's on June 9th, the fact that IGN Live is on June 8th and 9th, the fact that Summer Game Fest is from the 7th to the 10th. That weekend is terrible.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Agreed.
Yeah, so for
gamers,
Scott and I are going to.
We're going to be God. Good luck with the news.
We're going to the Summer Game Fest. So now it's like, man. And then we were like, cool. And then IGN's like, oh, hey, by the way, we got this thing. And I'm like, are you serious? We're only a couple blocks away. Are you serious?
Would you like to come to the event? No, please no.
If I was actually,
and now it's like, oh, hey, Xbox.
Party hopping.
And we're in Los Angeles. Do you want to come down? Oh, my God. We just got these appointments. What are you talking about? But it's like, man, I really not want to miss, you know, these upcoming games and possibly hands-on thing. Come the next Call of Duty.
I will say this, though. I feel like, and I know people say this every year about Xbox, but I genuinely do feel it this year. I feel like they're going to have a really good show.
I mean, the last show wasn't bad.
Mm. I'm just the hoping problem... we finally get some more Perfect Dark stuff, but that's just me.
That's what I'm hoping for as well.
The problem with Microsoft, the problem with their showcases before was they didn't have anything. They're like, hey, these games are they're coming out and they're like 4 or 5 years away.
Yeah.
Now we're at the point where, okay, these games that we announced, they're now coming.
Yeah.
And last year was a good show, to be fair. And whatever you think of Starfield, that Starfield Direct was actually one of the best showings of an individual game ever.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have sort of, they figured out the showcase thing, finally, in terms of how to produce and pace these things. Like, the fact that it was game after game, very little talking.
Yeah.
I think they had like 2 minutes of talking for like Forza, and that was about it, other than a bit of talking at the end and at the beginning. I really like their kind of little January show they do, the little kind of update developer direct thing.
They have the concise focus on like 4 specific games with maybe.
I think those are really cool. And I feel like with how much stuff they have now, we'll probably get a few more of those
probably
a year. Because man, they're like, you know, they call out in the announcement for this summer showcase, like this is the first time they're gonna have Activision as part of it.
Yep.
They're saying there's gonna be Activision games. And I'm not sure if that means just Call of Duty, because, you know, we do know if you're someone who pays attention, there are other Activision IPs being worked on. It's very obvious.
No, there's no such thing. It's just Call of Duty.
All that matters is Call of Duty. I don't care.
Call of Duty.
Xbox Live.
That's all the shareholders care about. That's all everybody cares about.
That's blasphemy saying that Activision has other games.
One of the main things for me, though, is Gears 6. And we know that that's pretty much confirmed to be showing up there, right?
Yeah, I'm sure they'll make some appearance. Whether how far along, we don't know.
I think it'll be a next year release. I'll put that bet out here right now.
You know, the bingo card already. I'm not going with that right now.
I'll say 2026, just to be safe.
That's always my year now. That'll be both the year, but we have a week of no layoffs as well as Gear 6. It'll be the return.
I don't know about that. That's a little. Okay, these layoffs, crap. These layoffs suck.
They do. It's messed up, man.
I will admit, the reasons I never liked the older showcases from before with Xbox is they always had a big tendency of overshowing cinematics and undershowing gameplay with
trailers.
Oh boy. And then they also would have moments like, especially their older indie trailers, like with Xbox Indie, they used to have like, it has like a 24-hour event with like 10 hours of trailer. There's only like 4 hours of trailers, but it was like 20 hours of developer discussion or going through like gameplay of a game that's already been released.
And this is why I really like the developer direct thing.
Yeah.
Because I think that they found the space to do those developer discussions.
Yes.
And to have those pieces of talking, because we all care about that stuff. We just don't want it in a main showcase. In a main showcase, we just want to see the game and that's it. Do its own separate thing and let it actually have time to shine and be celebrated. That's why the Starfield Direct being its own separate little thing was so cool, because you could just focus on everything they had to say and let them celebrate their game. Because, you know, I think we forget that developers are human beings sometimes.
Some of them like the games they work on, even if you don't like the games they worked on.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I mean, seeing them actually discuss why they made certain choices.
Yeah.
Like that, like it's like almost, some of them feel like it's like being a kid on Christmas in a sense. You know, oh, yeah, that exciting part where we just threw in a whole bunch of sandwiches. That was great. To us, it's like, okay, we get more storage. We can build more ships. But for them, it was probably that crunch hour thing that they did. And they just finally figured it out. And then it just got out to production. And they're so happy about it.
So come on, we can't talk about this showcase without each one of us making at least one sort of prediction. So come on, what's one thing you think that we're going to see there that isn't essentially confirmed?
Perfect. Yeah.
Scale bound.
No.
Man.
Hideki Kamiya has come back from retirement, or not really retirement, from his non-competitive clause to work with Xbox. No, I'm still hoping on Perfect Dark.
Do you know what I think we'll see? I think we'll see a Silk Song. Shattered.
No, we're not seeing Silk Song. Stop it.
We'll see Silk Song, and I think it will Shadow Drop.
No, that's gonna be a summer.
I've been saying it for months now. Like, I feel it in my bones.
Well, you saw the rating like a month ago and decided that's the Xbox showcase.
Wow.
I wouldn't mind seeing an announcement of Gear 6. That'd be nice.
Mm.
What about like a nice, maybe an announcement of Gear 6 and then Gears Collection coming later this year?
I'd rather focus on Gear 6. I don't need a collection.
Yeah,
I agree. But I feel like we forget how long they've been working on Gear 6 as well. Because let's remember, Coalition actually did have multiple teams for a while.
Yeah, one of they had their... a lot of shakeups too. They had a lot of people leaving that company.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I think one of their projects got cancelled, which was a shame, because I think they were working on like a brand new thing that was meant to be like a smaller game, and then that got cancelled. But I don't know. I feel like there's going to be some interesting things. Obviously, this isn't announced, but I feel like even if it's not coming super soon, it's the right time to probably announce something like this.
Yeah.
And that's the long rumored Fallout 3 remaster. I think they will announce.
I totally forgot that was supposed to be a thing.
Yeah. I think because it's that one and Oblivion are the two that kind of got leaked through court documents. And I feel like timing means they should announce the Fallout 3 remaster.
I mean, what is that one game from Obsidian that's coming out?
Avowed is coming out later this year.
I want to see that.
Avowed looks good.
Or I need to see more of that.
I'd like to, too. That's definitely something that's got me interested.
That and... they didn't say anything about hardware. I kind of want them to show off that controller they keep talking about.
Do you know what? The funniest thing is, I'm most intrigued to see how they handle calling anything exclusive or not. Because not that I care, but I do think how they handle that is important to the reception the showcase will get, regardless of what is shown.
I am interested if they're going to get rid of like the Xbox exclusive thing to just do Game Pass things, just so they don't have to worry about the controversy online it might create.
Unless
I want them to grow some balls and go, we bought these companies, these are our games. Sorry.
Yeah. It's time for them to show improvement on some of those
ROIs
that need to be happening.
I mean, let's be honest. I mean, you put these games on other platforms right now, and that really hurt the brand. I get what Xbox is saying, and it's not about the box, but you put your games on your competitor's box.
Yeah.
And I get it. You made money, and I'm totally for money. But people are still going, hey, so what else is next? You got PlayStation people going, hey, we're getting your games. We got Xbox guys going, what the hell?
But I also think it's part of that is just because it's different, right? Like I get people's frustration with it. I'm not saying that, but I also don't think it's necessarily the wrong decision, because you know, like, people are acting like doing that kills Xbox. No, it does not.
I will tell you this, if Sony did this, the shoe would be on the other foot.
Yeah,
so
they'd be like, "No, sorry, no, buy a PlayStation, game over, sorry."
For sure, no, I'm not. I'm not saying they wouldn't, but I'm just saying, like, it goes back to what I was saying in our Discord the other day of like, I think the industry is changing. Let's be real, for as many mistakes as Microsoft making gaming, they have been very, very good seeing where things were going years before everybody else. And they tend to be right, even when it shoots them directly in the face, like pushing towards digital way too early. But they were right in the end. Do you know what I mean? And it's kind of like, is this going to be another situation of them ultimately making the right decision and reading the business right?
I mean, but it worked for Steam for 10 years. I mean, it's got to be the right thing if it worked for Steam for 10 years.
Yeah, true.
So, they're not the first guys to do it.
No.
Because you got to remember, again, you know, gray hair, been here for a while.
Yeah.
There were times where you can go to the store and buy a PC game off of store shelves. And then when Steam came around,
discs you could put into computers.
Slowly started.
US gold ports.
I think it finally went away when I bought a game.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh, there's a code in the game, the box.
Yeah.
What I think will calm down a lot of this doom and glooming around Xbox, though, is when they talk about whatever their new hardware actually is, right? Because
they need to do that.
Yeah.
Because especially if, and let's be real, Phil Spencer doesn't hint at things for no reason. When he hints at things, it means it's either happening or it's in very good discussions to happen. And the guy has talked about wanting other stores on the console in the future. If they essentially make an even more PC-like console, that kind of explains this whole thing, right?
I got
the return of the KFC console.
I got words about that, and I don't think we have enough time to say it on this podcast. I see a lot of people speculating on that. So let me just say 5 minutes worth of words.
Okay.
The next Xbox cannot be a platform that plays PC games. There's a reason for that. The reason why there's a PC is so people can have an experience unlike the console that can be modular, change things out, make things better. Better processors, faster GPUs, more RAM, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. If you put what they're talking about, like putting Steam and Epic Games Store and blah, blah, blah on the next Xbox console, either the next Xbox is going to be super freaking pricey or it's going to run PC games like shit. We don't want that.
I agree. I agree to some extent. My little pushback on that would be, what if their whole thing is the box is basically a small part of our overall gaming business now, and we are going to take the approach of this is a premium box that is only for the people that want it.
Then you kill your, then you alienate your audience.
Do you? If you still, if you price it right and you have
if
that.
You, if you say anything is a premium and you're trying to justify that it's more expensive because it is a premium item, you're going to price it out for people who cannot afford it.
True, true.
And we are still in a recession. God knows how long this is going to take. People's cost of living is constantly going up. And people
games
aren't
are constantly being going up too.
So games I'll put, guys going up. That's
I'll put
not
one
a
more
idea.
I'll put one more little pushback on your thing then. What if they do the two-pronged approach and have that much rumored handheld that's being talked about?
I hate that idea.
But have it be like a very affordable device.
I got into a conversation with a very prominent handheld YouTuber, and I was like, this is a very dumb idea. And I pointed it out, and I was like, look, fantastic. Xbox puts out a handheld, and that differentiates it from what? The Steam Deck, the next Steam Deck, the ROG Ally, the Legion Go, and countless other handhelds that are out there. Why not just make it OS that is based upon gaming? Why not make a Microsoft Xbox version of Steam OS that can be installed on those?
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, good point. Good point.
I mean, great. If you bring out a handheld for and put them in the sea of things that are already out there, you are hoping that it stays afloat.
I think the one thing that would help their handheld massively is native Game Pass support, right?
Yes.
And that would be a massive selling point for probably a few million people. Like,
but I have that on my ROG Ally and my Legion Go.
Of course. So, but they could price it competitively to those things. And at that point, do you know what I mean? Like, there is, and don't get me wrong, we're not business experts, but they understand more business stuff than we do.
No, I'm not a business expert, but I am a tech guy, and that's the problem that I'm seeing. If you're going to make a box to compete against these and you're trying to price it, you're going to be eating into your costs. You're going to be taking a hit against machines that are already $600.
But they already do that with consoles, so would they care?
That's the thing. That is the thing. Would they care? Mm-hmm. Now, you have to compete against this.
Yeah.
You're not competing against
So I guess it comes down to whether they care or not. And if they don't care, they might do something really cool.
That kind of feels that they should have cared a long time ago. Even back in the 128 days, even a little bit after that, when PSP showed up, they should have said to themselves, hey, you know what? Pretty much when Xbox Duke was around, they should have probably jumped on around then, or even when they were actually doing well with Nokia.
Oh my God.
Perfect times, right? But
good old Windows phone.
I think the thing is, something happened with the portable market for a while where it essentially died, right?
It was still thriving.
The console
had
died for
DS
console.
And the 3DS. We still had a lot of Nintendo phones starting with the iPad.
I always find Nintendo to be a hard point, though, of comparison, because they are in their own world.
Exactly.
Of course.
And so it's not even a fair comparison to make because, you know, there's a reason for example. Well, there are many reasons the PS Vita failed, but there is a reason the PS Vita failed.
The technology was not. That tech was great.
Let's give a game that we need to play the game. Like, we didn't get one damn Gran Turismo game on the Vita.
I'm going to be really interested to see what they do. I think that I'm with you, Keith. I think they need to talk about some sort of hardware sooner than later. There obviously was Sarah Bond saying that they have some hardware releasing later this year, and there's been some reports that it's just a digital version of the Series X. I don't think it is that.
I don't think it was that.
I don't think it is
no
that. Way that.
There's no reason they'd want to hype that up.
I think it could be a new controller, as in like a potentially
more controllers.
Give us a Microsoft Xbox controller that can compete with the Edge. Give us something that competes with this damn thing, and give it better battery life. Or better yet, let us just keep putting batteries in. This
I mean, they have the Elite controller.
No.
No. I still want Xbox.
Elite control is a piece of junk compared to this. And I love my
Really?
Elite controller.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Now, see, I'd like Microsoft to come up with something that literally does feel like they've got something like a VMU or something in front of that. That would blow my mind.
We want a Dreamcast controller? Is that what we want?
Heck yes.
That's what I want.
I mean, look.
I want an LCD
memory
card in there.
Back from the dead to put in your controller?
Real quick.
Someone's
Jordan,
already made an
to
LCD.
The handheld thoughts. You know, I'm just using, you know, what I know in the tech field and, you know, hardware and parts and
Absolutely.
All that.
Absolutely.
And it's just there's too many things out there in this market right now for Microsoft to jump in and go, we're going to make a killing on this handheld, unless you have some super tech out there that does things that nothing else can do. And then again,
or unless you're willing to do what you do with the consoles, which is make a device that costs you a lot more to make than you sell it for.
But that's the thing. The tech isn't there. AMD does not have the tech.
No, but
that doesn't exist.
But
is it the problem?
Do you think it's going to be an AMD thing?
If you want to be backwards compatible, it has to be an AMD thing.
Yeah. Maybe it does. But I just because they're going in some weird places with their tech, right? Like Microsoft are they're moving to ARM with the Surface things. And,
ARM won't come into the consoles. ARM is
no, but would they come into handhelds?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Interesting.
Here's the problem with ARM. ARM cannot run x86 programs.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
you have to do emulation. The emulation has gotten better, but it's not perfect.
Yeah, which means you'd have to have a significantly better chip to run the game.
And we're going to see that when those new Surface laptops come out and runs ARM, because I'm waiting for it with the Snapdragon. I'm looking forward to that, to seeing how well it works, because somebody needs to knock Apple off its porch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, absolutely. So the problem is you have to have an x86 handheld.
Yeah.
Or everything is going to be running in the cloud, and then you got to do backwards compatibility in the cloud.
One thing I'd say to remember as well is there's always tech that we don't know about yet.
That's true.
These people know about years in advance. You know, it's like I always look back on that comment Sarah Bond made about the next console being the biggest technological leap that they've done in a console generation. And I get
the Xbox Series X too.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is I do get people's hesitancy with that, but there's always that thing of, but do they know something we don't know?
Well, that's true, but I follow AMD very, 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 very close.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a big fan of AMD, and they don't have nothing out there right now. And NVIDIA doesn't care about the console space.
No,
but I bet Microsoft could write a check to make them care.
No, NVIDIA, they don't care. NVIDIA does not care.
Microsoft worked with NVIDIA before, right?
Yes, and they hated the relationship.
Interesting.
Yeah, it was not a good relationship at all.
That's a shame, terrible. Because imagine if they still worked with NVIDIA now, how different the consoles might be.
Yeah, it was. Oh man, I'm trying to remember how many years old. I kept. That was when magazines were still very prominent.
Wasn't it the 360? Was it the 360?
Because one of them was Power VR. I don't remember which one it was.
I think it might have been the 360, but that's just off the top of my head. But yeah, I don't know, because NVIDIA, maybe I'm misinformed, but the impression I get is that NVIDIA's tech is far superior to AMD's tech.
Depends
on what spaces, but for the most part of talking about gaming, then yes.
Yeah, so it would be interesting to see if they could ever be persuaded back into the console market, to see what a difference that would make. And, you know, maybe someone will work with Intel one day because they've decided to make GPUs now as well.
They might be not making GPUs for very long. So
fair.
Yeah.
Before you know it. Damn.
Yeah. The Arc isn't where they want it to be.
Apparently, though, and I don't know how true this is, but apparently for the cost of those GPUs, they were actually quite performant. Like, I think I saw a Digital Foundry thing that basically said for how much they were charging, they were outperforming what you'd expect. Interesting. Interesting.
No.
Interesting.
No, unfortunately, no.
So basically, we just have to live in the NVIDIA monopoly in the PC space.
No. So when it comes to laptop, AMD is pretty solid as well. Oh, okay. Their iGPUs are good. But when it comes to discrete graphic cards, it's a very price for performance.
That's a shame. Kind of thing. That's a shame. That is a shame.
But we're not a technical podcast. We're a gaming podcast.
Not yet. No,
not yet.
Maybe.
So, let's talk about something that we all been wanting to talk about because it looks like we're running out of time here. So review scores. That seems to be a very popular topic on the internet as of now. There was a lot of talk about that people or outlets should do away with review scores with review scores. And that's a topic I want to discuss with you guys because we actually talked about doing this in the past. Now, I grew up reading magazines like Game Pro and things of that nature. And if those ever read Game Pro, you know that they had that little guy that for a score, he would change his face from like frowning to like his head blowing up because it was such a great game. And I thought that was a nice thing.
I got one of those shirts.
So, but it was also scores. It still had a score.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go on this one first because I really want to hear what you guys think. The problem I have with getting rid of review scores is they're so, I think I'm using the wrong word, entrenched in the review score game. You know, when people do a review, it's a review score. You know, there are some people that go, hey, play it, don't play it. And I feel that maybe that's kind of a scapegoat because you can always say, hey, this game is a 4, but
it's a fun 4.
You can make the game say this game is a 2, not because it's a terrible game, but because it has terrible technical issues. And I don't agree with this. No Man's Sky. And then they turn around and redo the game and it's a fantastic game that is damn near perfect. Mm. So the problem I have with scores is even if you take them off, people are still going to go through the article, look for what they're looking for, and then stop. A score doesn't really mean, hey, this is the end all be all. I do reviews and I give games a score where I think it deserves, but I also talk to you about the nuts and bolts of the review. I don't talk about story because story should not be spoiled in a review. I talk about gameplay. I talk about visuals. I talk about what's going on under the hood. I talk about my personal feelings about a game. And there are some games where I give a low score because I think that some of the things that are in there aren't up to par. And then there are some games where I'll go, hey, I feel this game is a 4, but some of these things kind of bother me. And the developer said, hey, they're working on it, so we'll have to wait and see later on. Review scores are not an end-all be-all. But I don't think that removal is going to change anything either. That's just me. I'm going to shut up now.
Yeah, we're going to. I want to actually add on to that I do agree that if we do get rid of the review scores, people are still not going to technically read the whole review. Odds are they're just going to read the headline of the review or they'll read the first paragraph and just be done with everything else.
Yeah.
But my big thing about review scores itself is I think you have to also acknowledge that people who are in the reviewing and the journalist space basically review games in like their own different metric in their head. They could do a lot of different based reviews on their gameplay, story. I mean, I don't review stories in the sense that it actually spoils it. I just review it in like, this is what I liked of how the story like works with its favor or not. There are certain games where the story works with the gameplay. There are some times where it doesn't work with the gameplay, kind of a deal. But overall, I think the review scores themselves are very personal for each individual who writes them. They give it based on their preferences, based on how they do things. And I know that a lot of people, especially in the Twitter spaces, will basically get the scores and just not care about anything else in the review, whether it be the person who wrote it or what's inside the actual review, and just put them out there. But each individual score is personal to the reviewer because of their own metrics they put in their own head or the metrics they put in the actual review itself. That's why I always tell people, if they're looking at reviews, look at reviewers that you trust, reviewers that you understand how they review games, because that will give you a better glimpse of, is this a game you want to get? Is this game not you don't want to get? It could be something that's a high-reviewed game, but if it doesn't hit the check marks or the checklist that you want, it's not going to be a game you want to buy. It could be a one of my favorite games that I played in like the last few years. I review it a bit lower, but it was still one of my favorite games I played that year, which was like The Strangers of Paradise with Final Fantasy Origin. It was a mess of a game, but holy crap, was it a fun mess of a game.
Oh yeah, exactly. Chaos.
See, that's that thing, right? And that's the thing right there. How do you get around that? You know, you review the game low, but it's like, I really enjoyed it, even though it had great bones. How do you get around that?
So yeah. There's a few ways I try and get around that. I also have other things to say, but on that, one of the things I do when reviewing a game is I try and figure out, and not every reviewer is able to do this. I have a development background, so it's a little bit easier for me. But you try and figure out what is the game actually trying to achieve, even if some of these aspects aren't for me, and who are they for? And then you kind of point that out in the review while making it clear that they didn't necessarily connect with you either. And then you base your score on that. You know, like one of the reviews I did was a SpongeBob game, which I believe was like about a year ago for us now. And that game isn't really for me because it's targeted at an audience that is a different age, right? But when I put that lens on it, the game does a very good job of being what it's trying to be. And therefore, I had to still give it a fairly good rating because it's doing what it should be doing. You know, it's kind of like you do have to balance between, because
I hate SpongeBob, by the way.
The thing about a review is a review is an opinion, and it's your opinion of the game, but you're also reviewing it for the other gamers. And you have to balance those two things at the same time. And I think that some reviewers are much better at that than others. I think we're all very good at it at our website. But yeah, going back to the scale and those kind of issues, because I have a lot to say on this. I think that there's a few reasons that the scale is broken. I'll put it that way. I think some websites have a 10-point scale or maybe a 100-point scale, and then don't. And then
I can't imagine trying to do 100 points.
And then they don't make proper use of it. And part of that is because they decide that we only want to review the games that are popular. But the thing is, when you're reviewing only the games that are very popular, you're going to end up with the majority of the games you're reviewing all being in a certain block of scores. And then it makes part of your scale completely useless. So, you know, and one of the things I say is, like, on a 10-point scale, even a 6 out of 10 shouldn't be viewed necessarily as a bad score. But it is, because we've been trained to think in that way. Do you know what I mean?
That's the big issue right there. It's what we're trained on. You know, if we see anything below a 7, oh my God, it's bad. And
it's terrible.
It doesn't always mean that. No. You know, a 3 does not mean a bad game. It's just some of the pieces aren't there, or maybe the person reviewing the game. And that's why we always see some games that are reviewed similarly, and we see other games that are like so far in the spectrum. Like, I've seen one game that people are like, this is a great game, that I see a couple of you go, this game is terrible. Okay, great. Why is it terrible?
You might why remember this.
Why do you think it's terrible? What,
do
what's
you
going
remember
on
when I think I reviewed one of the F1 games either last year's or the year before, and some like crazy guy came for me on Twitter because I said it was the best driving sim available on console. Like,
wow.
And it's just like, but that was my opinion. But when you look at all of the other like 50 reviews the game had, about half of them agreed with me. So it was like, I wasn't even on my own in that opinion, you know. It's, I don't know, it's weird. I do think Scott nailed something, which is every site will have its review scale, and there is a framework there to work to, but you mm-hmm. still have your own personal way of interpreting that same scale. So when I review on our 5-star scale, for example, what I think is a 5-star game isn't the same as what Keith thinks is a 5-star game. We may have different levels to it. You know, I won't name the reviewer, but a prominent reviewer for another website told me that they automatically knock 3 points off of a score if the game crashes once while playing it. And it's like, really? Like, but I'm the reason I'm putting that information out there is to illustrate that we all have our own lines. Some people couldn't care less about technical issues. Some people think 5 bugs. You know, when I played Cyberpunk, I was fortunate enough to literally get 5 bugs in 70 hours of playing that game at launch.
That's pretty solid, actually.
Yeah.
But for some people, even that would be too many. Do you know what I mean?
I wish I was that fortunate.
And it depends on the platform. Like, if I know for a fact I'm not going to give a game or dock a game 3 points just because it crashes, just because I play games on PC, and I know even the most optimized game on PC will crash, not due because of the game, just because Windows is like, you know what, fuck you.
And I'm going to do something. We decided to do a scan today. Why?
Oh, yeah.
Windows is like, you know what? I used up all the memory. You're running off patient file now. We're just going to kill your game. Like,
see, and this is a bit of insight to how I score, and I do this on my own 10-point scale. Well, actually, 20-point scale on my own website, and I also do it on our scale. For when it comes to technical issues, unless they're egregiously bad and basically making the game unplayable, I will never dock more than like a star off of the, do you know what I mean? Unless it's really bad and the game is actually unplayable. Because to me, and the reason I do that for technical issues specifically, is because I'd like to give the benefit of the doubt of most of these things will probably be fixed. Many of them will probably be fixed by the time you even play the game. And therefore, why am I going to rate a game that I think is a 4.5 out of 5, a 2.5, just because it had some technical issues? But I do know reviewers that would do that because they care more about the technical side of things.
Well, see,
people have different things.
I'll give you my viewpoint on this, then, since I care about the technical of a lot of games. It depends. Like, if I'm doing a review on a game and I write the developer, say, hey, look, you know, this game has crashed, or I'm seeing optimization issues or low frame rates, or maybe there's a memory leak, and the developer's like, yeah, I know, we're aware of this. This is going to be fixed in the first patch. Fine. You've already got it handled. You know about it. I'm not even going to worry about it. Yeah. If I talk to the developer and they're like, we don't know about this yet, we haven't seen this. If I see any kind of pushback or nothing saying, hey, we're working on this, then I start docking point. Then I start going, okay, this is a problem. This is not going to be addressed. But if they're already telling me, yeah, we know this is happening, we know there's going to be a new patch, because most people don't put out patches when you're reviewing a game.
No.
So I don't have a problem with
that. Not till day one, usually.
Exactly. Yeah. Then I don't have a problem with that. And I put it in a review and say, hey, I've noticed this and this and this and this, but the developer has promised there will be a patch that alleviates that issue. Problem solved. Move on to the next thing.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be clear, I'm not saying that I don't dock points, but I do have a limit of, for me, there's a limit to how much a technical issue can actually impact on my experience unless it's making the game basically unplayable. And most of the time, that isn't the case, right?
Yeah. I think I agree with that as well. Like, yeah, like if it's something that's breaking it completely or something that just stops you from a progressive state to even get to quote unquote a happy path to say that I clear it or even to play the game enough in order to make a proper judgment call. Of course, I'd probably feel the same way as well, where it's, yeah, this experience was supposed to be good, but because of this technical issue, I have to make those types of calls just to alleviate that.
Yeah.
And yeah, as everybody was saying, yeah, of course, I guess that whole, yeah, the whole thing about scores is because of differentiation. I kind of feel the same way about that as well, where, yeah, I feel as if scores are definitely important for the experience itself, because of course we're playing it for the experience. We're judging it based on how we feel about the games, not. But of course, I mean, sometimes you hear about a hive mind, but like if you've trusted the actual reviewer more than enough, you could probably go off on what they're saying or what everybody else is saying to that sort of degree. Like even back in the day, and I still feel pretty ashamed about it now, there were times where like I used to like Angry Joe.
I'm glad that you saw the light. Oh my god,
we all have to evolve at our own pace.
That guy,
exactly. But the way that he reviewed it and some of the things that he saw in certain games, I was like, oh, I agree with that, or I've seen that. So that sort of trust between that and the audience, that's so important. But yeah, like
I
just all those things.
You know what's funny, you know, when I think about this is, gaming is not the only media that uses, or anything in a review that uses scores. I mean, cars are reviewed in scores, movies are reviewed in scores. Pretty much anything that's reviewed has a score. Mm-hmm. But why is it always an issue when games are reviewed with scores?
Because because you're interacting with them yourself, they have this extra level of, like, they're so personal to you that it's just, I think that's what it is. Like, a car is still personal to you, and what you like or don't like about a car is personal to you, but there are more things about a car that you know are definitely good or bad and that you can't argue with. Do you know what I mean? Whereas with a game, you can argue every single aspect of even the best game ever made. that's the problem, I think.
That holds true, because I mean, that last statement, arguing, you know, if it's the best game ever made, again, that's all personal. I'm a car nut. I can argue every piece of a car, certain cars, the curves of the cars, you know, the amount of horsepower, what type of engine is in the car, you know, why has the 2024 version changed from 2023? What are the main differences? Why did you rate this higher than that? What are the big changes of this car?
So, I mean, anything like me who just anything like, I like to push the car and make it go vroom.
Compared to me, I like it when it goes from this point to that point without incident.
And that's the perfect. Everybody has some kind of justification or they care about. Like, I care about a lot of things about a car. You know, my wife is like, it's a car, it gets me A to B, like you just said. But me, no, I like the way it looks. I like the way it drives. When it goes over a bump, do I hit the bump or does it just glide over the bump? Know what kind of struts are in the car, you know, is there a suspension system that I can adjust, you know, how low to the ground is the car, you know, like how stiff is the steering wheel, is there any way to adjust that? It just, and here we go. We're reviewing a car like we're reviewing a game.
Yeah. Yeah. Going back to the review scale and games and all that stuff, I actually think there's a few ways to fix or at least alleviate some of the issues. And one will never happen because outlets don't have time or staff to do it. But I really think more re-reviewing of games would actually help.
Here's a problem with that. Here's a problem with that. And I'm going to tell you why that's a problem. Not in that sense. That's good. When you're talking about what we talked about earlier, game aggregates, Metacritic does not allow you to review a game, to re-review a game.
Does it not?
No.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Because I think OpenCritic does, right?
I don't know.
Because I'm pretty sure on OpenCritic, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure, for example, if you look up like Days Gone, you'll see some outlets and you can actually see the dates of two different reviews and they've got different scores.
Yeah, Metacritic will not do that. They were very specific when I was doing the novel to get
get acknowledged.
Yeah, by sure. And one of the things was when he came back to me, he was like, so do you guys go over a review after you've written it the first time? Because that's something that we don't do. And I'm like, no. But I was really lying because, yeah, we do. Sometimes we do.
And
secret, I will be doing more of that. I've told you about this, Keith, for quite a while now. I plan to re-review some old games on the Outer Haven. So, you know, look out for that. But the other thing that I really like that I know not everybody is a fan of is, and don't get me wrong, I don't think they're the best at it anymore, but I think there is a way to do this correctly and in a way that's informative to people. But Famitsu do the thing where they do the four reviews, right, for the same game. And I do think that if you had, for example, if we're all reviewing the same game, I don't know, Final Fantasy VII Rebirth, for example, we would all have most likely somewhat different scores. And I do think even that in some ways would be helpful to alleviating the problem of, oh, I just see one score at the bottom and I think I know what that means because it's predefined and I'm trained to know this certain thing. You know, I think that would alleviate it because it's like, oh, I've actually got three different scores. Let me read about why. Why are these three scores different, or why are these four scores different? You know, I think that is something that could potentially help as well.
Yeah, I think that's pretty awesome too. Like, because again, like, it's four different views, right? Like, yeah, it could be one person, like, for instance, back to the Rebirth situation, it could be one guy mostly plays puzzles, another guy, he's been a Final Fantasy vet ever since the 80s. Then you got this one person who just jumped on when 15 showed up, and we're talking Vanilla 15, and they're just like, yeah, it just wasn't for me. Yeah, kinda, I didn't even get Royal Edition. Screw that. And then you have somebody else. Yeah,
like, 15 was my first Final Fantasy. So,
wow,
yeah, everyone has.
I played it back on the NES.
I didn't like it on the NES. Too. I didn't like it till the SNES ones came out. That's because I was a kid who hated the NES graphics when you compare it to the SNES graphics.
I played the first one too, but just briefly until. My the person who owned the game literally kicked me out of the house. He's just like, they actually kicked me out of his room. Like, yeah, don't do that. So that you just screwed up my life.
I didn't have a Dreamcast as a kid. I wanted one.
Never too late.
Oh no!
Guys, we're coming up on 2 hours, so we need to wrap this up. So, anybody have anything to say before we say goodbye?
Never too late. Never too late.
Oh, look, he pulled it out.
Never too late.
The only thing I'd like to say is
game ever on there.
if you've liked me being on this show, maybe come and check out my own little podcast, because I'll have all three of these guys on it at some point. It's called the Gaming Mix Podcast. You can obviously find me on Twitter and things, and you know, I will be shouting about it there. And yeah, you're all welcome on anytime.
What about now?
Right after the other podcast.
Right now.
Podcast-a-thon.
I mean, you said anytime, so challenge accepted. Let's go.
Jeez.
All right, I mean, so don't challenge me, because I could talk for another 2 hours easily.
I think one thing I just want for people to take out of this discussion of the review scores is just look at the person who's doing the review, look at why they're doing it, as well as see the history of the games they reviewed and why, to actually have a full understanding of certain things and why they actually care about that score.
And also just understand that everybody's different. So a 7 out of 10 for someone else might be a 10 out of 10 for you, but it could also be a 2 out of 10 for you. You know, don't take anyone's review too set in stone. Like, understand that you will have different mileage on a game.
All right. Well, that said, thanks for checking out this episode of the Spectator Mode Podcast. As always, be sure to check us out over at downhame.net. And if you want to know more about our great, fantastic podcast, you can find them out on YouTube. I can't talk now. Or Apple Podcasts, YouTube Podcasts, Spotify, Buzzsprout, and wherever else podcasts are. That said, it's always been an honor for you guys to check us out, and we would love to talk to you. So if you have anything to say to us, hit us up on our Twitter account. It's Twitter at The Outer Haven, not X. It's Twitter. I will not call it X.
I agree.
Terrible name. Terrible 100%. Name. Terrible name. That said, thanks for watching, and we will see you all next time.
See ya.
Peace.